You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 54. And if you're listening on drop day, it's March 20th. Episode 54, near and dear to my heart for Edward Mujica. This is not the first time we've mentioned Edward Mujica on this podcast. Thank the Lords. He's not, no Alexia Gondo, but he is special. This is the official podcast of stealing info and passing it off as your own. JK, we don't do that. We don't do that, but we know people that do. Don't do that. Cite your sources. You know who you are.
Yes.
It's also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going today, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey app. Hit that subscribe button. Leave us that 5-star review and leave a comment. We have plenty to talk about. I'm sure people are going to have takes with today's topics. So leave a comment. And on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button, subscribe to the WEI page, leave that same comment there too. Follow us on socials at PlayTessie, Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and Pat and Coops in the background, we've got, you get the reference. But gentlemen, it's been a semi-eventful couple of days since we chatted with Loomer.
Yeah, semi.
Today, I mean, we're today, like literally a... If you're listening on drop day, we're literally a week, right? Drop day's Thursday. Yeah, we're a week away from the season. Jeez.
Yeah.
No. We dropped this one on Wednesday. Doesn't season start?
No, you're almost right.
A little more than a week.
Well.
It's not a math show.
You want to know what's happening in less than a week, though, Sammy?
Tell me, Gordo.
It's actually happening in less than 2 days.
Oh, no.
It's a good thing. Because we're going down to the fort.
Oh, boy, we're going down to the fort. Shout out AirPaz, the sketchy company that I bought my plane ticket through. Love you guys, AirPaz.
And shout out eDreams, sponsor this podcast.
Yeah, so Gordo and I, Pat, I don't know if we've told you this, Coop, you too. We were on the phone coordinating our tickets. I bought mine via AirPaz.
Yes. Old AirPaz. Good old AirPaz.
And then Gordo, what was your eDreams?
eDreams, baby. eDreams.
eDreams.
We're making eDreams come true.
And knock on wood, neither of us got scammed. We actually got our tickets. So.
All right.
So far. We'll see when we get
there. I was just saying, baby victory right now could be a big victory soon.
I knocked on wood.
Yeah. See, that's. That's just one of two hurdles because I think it's the way. Sammy, do you remember if it's the way there or the way back that we're taking Spirit? We got Spirit one of those.
Oh, no.
I mean, if it's on the way back, who cares? We just get stuck at Red Sox spring training in sunny Florida. That's fine.
Yeah, true. I hope. Yeah, you're right. I hope it's the way back. Also, if they delay, because our flight back is a nice little 6 a.m.er. So if they delay that and like we find the night before, then it's like, oh, actually we're flying back at 9. Okay, I'll take that. Whereas the first one, if the first one gets delayed, like we're flying in on Thursday, we're trying to get in at 3. There's a game at 6. So like, eh, we'll see what happens there. Hopefully that doesn't get delayed. But news of the day. Yeah, news of the day. Brian Baio, opening day starter. Oh. No. We're not going. We'll get there later, Pat. We'll get to some. I saw that. Yeah. I saw you.
It was my news of the day. All right.
No. That was the real news of the day. I just prefer the news of the day to be something positive. We'll get to some Pat's prognosis later.
We can go positive news of the day. We'll get to the negative stuff after. Let us be positive.
A positive news of the day. Brian Baio's the opening day starter. I think it's something that I know I saw coming for some time. I feel like you guys probably did too. I think most people had this coming. But Sammy, is this not, you thought it was coming?
Yeah. I mean, I love this. This is awesome. This is it's kind of like an ode to Baio, like, yo, you're the guy. We've extended you. You're the new number one. And I know a lot of people wanted Pivetta, but come on. He's on an expiring deal. You got to put Baio as your opening day starter. At least that's, people get excited about that at the very least. I love it. I think it's a nice gesture by Cora, I assume, made the call.
You'd hope.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not Cora, then we got more issues. But yeah, I love it. Brian Baio, opening day starter. Let's do it.
Pat, what was your reaction? You see Brian Baio's the opening day starter.
You just gave him a Brinks truck full of money, and then you just hand the keys over. You just say, you're our guy. Like, that's what they should have done all along. I'm glad they decided on it. If they did announce Pivetta, I would have understood because, you know, veteran, he's been there the longest of the, if you want to call it a rotation. And then, like, I would have understood. But, like, in terms of what it means to Baio, what it means for kind of where this team's at, like, these are the guys you're building around. Give him the keys, let him go. And I'm glad they decided on it. I hope he crushes it.
Yeah, you give him the contract. You're basically telling him that at such a young age, you're our franchise pitcher. So why would you make him the franchise pitcher and then have him pitch the second game of the year behind? And I know Pivetta was great at the end of last year, but let's be real here. You'd put him behind the guy that you removed from the rotation last year in like May. So yeah. They're basically telling you that this year is about putting the young guys in positions to prove themselves and put them in roles where they can show what they can do. It's not just with Baio, it's with everybody. So telling Baio and not just with your words, but with your actions that he is the guy, like he's going to be your stopper when you're in a slump, when you're losing, when you've lost three in a row and he's hitting the bump, you're expecting 6 or 7 scoreless from him. Like he's that guy. So this is just the first part of that message. And Sammy, you'll remember, I think I have this right. You and I were on the radio, not this past time. It was like 2 times ago. So it was probably like 3-4 weeks ago with Bradfo. And he asked us at the very end who we thought was going to be the opening day starter. And Giolito was not hurt yet. So basically the options were, at the time, Baio, Pivetta, Giolito, or signing Monty or making some trade or something like outside the organization, whatever. And I want to say you and I both said Baio.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying Baio the whole time, but like, it just doesn't make, who else would you do? Pivetta would be the other guy on an expiring deal. Giolito, also kind of sort of on an expiring deal at the time. It's got to be, even if they got Montgomery, I think that would be weird to make him the opening day guy. Give it to Baio. He's your dude. He's your dude. By the way, I'm so excited for a season where we finally get to see the young guys play.
And you know what? God,
surely there will be no growing pains or anything like that.
No. You got to develop. You know, when you don't have that much money to blow, you got to develop, guys. And the Red Sox, they're just really not raking it in. So,
to give a little credit to Bradfo, he had said he'd guess Pivetta. Pivetta was his pick, and in fairness to him, at the time, Pivetta was walking around camp like he owned, and maybe he's still, I don't know, but I just know at the start of camp, like in like those interviews on the bench, like he was walking around like he owned the place. And the veteran, granted, I guess he is the veteran of the staff. He's like kind of, or actually he's not kind of, he is the only veteran on that staff, right?
Is he like the longest tenured Red Sox pitcher?
He's got to be.
No.
How
can Whitlock?
Oh. Well, Whitlock. No, Whitlock came after because Pivetta was traded for in 2020. Whitlock was the
24. Yeah, Whitlock was 21.
I was thinking Bay. Yeah, I'm thinking
Bay. That's crazy. Holy shit.
Yeah. Not counting minor leagues. But how came up in 20?
Yeah.
Did Pivetta pitch in 20 for us?
Yeah, he came up late season because they got him from Philly for Hembree and Workman. And then he was in AAA working on like mechanic stuff and then came up.
God. And one time I was in Fenway when Workman got traded back to the Red Sox and I was walking behind him and I thought it was him, but I wasn't 100% sure. And I didn't have my glasses or contacts in. So I kept doing that thing where you try to walk to the side of a person and to see their face. And he totally caught me doing it. And he went, "Hey." And I went, "Hey, welcome back." It was so awkward. And that was it. And then it was not a good stretch. I think I ruined his second stint with the Red Sox by bringing really bad energy. So sorry about that.
I did that once with Orlando Cabrera and the same thing kind of happened, but instead of away like weirdly, I just was like, "Can I take a selfie with you?" It's like in high school, so I took a selfie with Orlando Cabrera. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I seem like, that's wholesome though. I seem like a creep to friggin' Brendan Workman. He's like, "Who's this guy trying to look at my face?"
Do you guys, trivia question? Do you know what Brendan Workman is now today?
Real estate agent.
Very good. Yes, I follow him on Instagram. He has his own real estate account. So he's got his account, but he's got his real estate account. His real estate, I'm like one of 111 people that follows that account. I was weirdly looking at it maybe yesterday.
Yeah, he was a wild pitch. Like he pitched off of his curveball, which you almost never see. So like, right. Am I crazy to say that? He threw
Yeah.
You're right.
Absolutely. Absolutely did. And he was like, I don't know about you guys. When he first came up and for the first like several years, maybe several is too many, but like the first like 3 or 4 years that he pitched for the Red Sox, I was just like, anytime he came in, I just felt like shit.
Yeah.
And then
you would be correct.
At some like, and then like 2019 or what? Was it 2019? Yeah, there it is. Thank you, Coop. Yes. Brendan Workman. I was right on the nut. 211 followers. Come on.
That's wait.
You weirdo.
Followed by only Nat Gordo. That is awesome.
Go up. In his likes, because he posted about some plot of land he's trying to sell that doesn't have, with the deer. In the likes, Mitch Moreland liked it. So, he's trying to sell some big plot of land with deer and whatever that water container thing is. Watch this episode on YouTube or pull up Brendan Workman's Instagram. What's the ad of this thing?
Coop. I just want to see it again. Can you go back to just Gordo? It just says followed by Nat Gordo.
Brendan _Workman_realtor. That's his at.
That's incredible.
Followed by at Nat Gordo.
Do we know where he is a real estate agent?
Texas, right? Where he's from?
That thing is not in Massachusetts. I promise you that. That
it's not
plot
here,
of land is massive. Yeah, he's got to be Texas.
Texas.
Yeah, isn't he from Texas? Anyway, yeah.
He seems like he's from Texas, but let's move.
All the hashtags are Texas, just to clarify.
Say that again, Coop.
All the hashtags are Texas.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
One more time.
Hashtags are Texas.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. The next topic... I don't know if I want to say that like a uncomfortable topic. I don't know. It's just like an interesting topic of discussion because the Red Sox announced that before opening day, we knew obviously there was going to be a Tim Wakefield memorial for Tim and Stacy Wakefield, who both passed away. Wakefield on the last day of the season and his wife more recently few weeks ago. But the team announced that they are having their 04 reunion for the 20-year anniversary of the 04 championship on the same day as that for the home opener. And they're inviting the entire 2004 team, which there was obviously some discussion about this. Was Curt Schilling going to be invited to the 04 reunion? I know Gabby Starr had said that there were players that on that team that said they would not want to go if Curt Schilling was going to be there. So certainly was an interesting topic. Like, would Curt Schilling get invited? Would he not? It seems like he has been invited. Obviously kind of like a touchy subject that gets touchier now that the Wakefield ceremony is being mixed in with this, because obviously Curt Schilling disclosed that Tim Wakefield was battling cancer when Tim Wakefield did not want that information out in the public, which was kind of a shitty move on, not kind of, it was a shitty move on Curt Schilling's part. So I wanted to get your guys' takes. Sammy, you want to go first this one? What was your reaction to seeing that all the 04 team would be invited to this?
Well, first, it's always great to see the 04 team back together. But on the topic of Curt Schilling, which I feel like you have to address, you can't gloss over that. We have to. It's our duty as people who cover this team to talk about it. And my stance is pretty simple. And I think that Gabriel's report of Red Sox players not wanting him there or not wanting to go if he is there, I think that strengthens the point I'm about to make. I think that anything that would possibly detract from the Wakefields, no, it's a no from me. So if you're bringing Curt Schilling and you feel that it's a risk that he will take the attention away or bring any sort of added negativity, I don't think you do it. It's supposed to be not uplifting, but, you know, a community thing where we kind of all
a celebration of his life.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So if there's any chance that there could be added negativity, and I think it's pretty clear that there is, I would say that he should not be there. Pretty simple.
Yeah, fuck him. Fuck Curt Schilling. No, like honest to God, like he deserves to. So it's so two-sided, because that whole ceremony should be nothing but like embracing the Wakefield, such like a positive, memorable experience. But at the same time, if you're saying that you kind of hope that Curt Schilling is imbued into oblivion and maybe catches a couple pieces of pizza and beer cans to the head, you'd be lying. Like, fuck Curt Schilling. They should not have invited him.
Man, that was, I mean, that was beautiful. I'm trying to be all like PR, like, all right, word this like.
Yeah,
this
is, no. And like, that's the whole thing. And like, I was thinking about it. I was kind of like sitting on it all day. Like, we keep it very, especially when it comes to players, like we're honest, but we try and maintain like we know these guys, you know, like I don't know Curt Schilling. I don't want to know Curt Schilling. Fuck Curt Schilling. Like, yeah, that's my stance. I'm appalled that he was even invited after all of his former teammates like were so furious. If he didn't get extended invite, I don't think anybody would have batted an eye.
Can I ask you guys a question? Because a lot of this discussion is happening because the two ceremonies are happening on the same day. And I absolutely think that this Tim Wakefield ceremony should be the first thing that happens before the season. Like, they need to do this. It's like the obvious move. But like the 07 reunion, I remember I was there for 13, one I was not there for, but neither of those occurred on the first day of the season. So why mix the two together? Because like, my stance on the Curt Schilling thing as it pertains solely for the 04 reunion, Wakefield ceremony aside, that he should be invited to the 04 reunion, and it's up to him if he wants to go and take the reaction that the fans are going to give him. He's probably going to get booed, and if he wants to go and take that, he can take it, and the fans would have the opportunity to show Curt Schilling to his face how they feel about him. And I think it would be a pretty clear-cut reaction. But now when you mix it with the Wakefield ceremony, I'm like uncomfortable with the idea that Curt Schilling could be at Tim Wakefield's ceremony when, in essence, he denied Tim Wakefield his dying wish. Like, it just feels wrong.
Yeah, I didn't really consider that you could split the two ceremonies. I think they should keep the ceremonies together because Wakefield was a huge part of the Red Sox, not just in 2004, but like for how many years? Like 17 years of service?
Yeah.
Crazy amount. So I like that both are on the same day. If they weren't, then yeah, I agree. Yeah, Kurt, yeah, go ahead, come. You're going to get booed probably. But, you know, they are on the same day. So I can't.
But like, what would stop them? Like, why not just do Wakefield ceremony before the home opener and then, like, sometime in the beginning of May, you have the 04 reunion. And, like, of course, you're going to acknowledge Tim Wakefield at that too because he was an important part of the team, but it's not like the Wakefield ceremony. And at least then it's a little bit less like, what the fuck is this guy doing here? Because, yeah. Like, it's unfortunately, like, obviously, we all have our opinions about Curt Schilling. Everyone in Boston does. Like, he has done some ridiculous things since his retirement. He said a lot of crazy shit, and it's wrong. But you can't deny the important part of Red Sox history that he played that team. So it's like, my stance on it is almost the same as, like, the steroid guys in the Hall of Fame. It's like, you can't, like, erase history, but, like, fans should get the opportunity to, like, if they don't like Curt Schilling being there, which I think most wouldn't, they should get the opportunity to boo him. But the Wakefield ceremony is just a completely different animal. He should just be nowhere close to that.
Yeah. But also, I also think that it should be on opening day, the 04 ceremony. That I and Wakefield, it should be on opening day. It's just bigger. That's the biggest, that's the most important team in the history of the Red Sox, the 04 team. So, you know, it. Curt Schilling, you reap what you sow. That's what he's got to do now. And by the way, not at all related to politics. I don't care about that. It's being an asshole is what I care about. So I think that he'll be there. I don't think he will be there. And it's unfortunate that it's come to this, but that's where we're at.
Do you think he'll go, Pat?
Yeah, I think he's a smug son of a bitch. I think he will go.
I'm torn. I don't know because he hasn't done anything on social since the Wakefield thing. That's what makes me think that maybe he wouldn't go, because before that I would have said easily yes, going 1,000%. But now I don't know, because I think maybe even he knows at this point that he's crossed the line, and that, like, I feel like that's hard to do with him.
All right, this is going to be tinfoil hat, and it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek funny, and it's like a situation that isn't too tongue-in-cheek. But what if, and like, this isn't out of the, I think, realm of possibility. What if with the Netflix documentary series that they're both doing on the season and that they're doing on the 2004 team that's going to come out, what if John Henry, like, went to Curt Schilling, two people that are, they just love to have people love them. And John Henry was like, hey, I can turn around your public perception here. Come out opening day. Say I'm sorry to the city of Boston. Say I'm sorry to, like, the Wakefields. And they'll dress it up for Netflix and everything. And that's just, like, something that they can sell on the season.
No, I mean, if
you're
just
going to be making more, you're going to be making
that
more
was conspiracy
about Schilling.
I don't think that'll happen, but.
I don't think that's too crazy. That's not too, I mean, I, well, no, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But the idea of Curt Schilling apologizing, I think that would be good. I would, if he genuinely apologized and expressed that he felt bad about, as Gordo said, denying Wakefield of his dying wish is so fucking gross. You know, it would behoove him. I don't know if I'd fully forgive him, but it'd be a step in the right direction. But
I wouldn't believe him for a second. That dude's a scumbag.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
But I think that there's a hint of the Wakefields maybe saying, hey, like, we forgive him. Like, at the end of the day, like, this is a much bigger situation than, like, someone just, like, tattling. And if they want to handle it that way, maybe they handle it that way. Maybe they, like, said that to someone to pass it along and be like, hey, we forgive him. Let him do his thing. I could see that. I could see the Wakefields being like the bigger people in this situation, just saying like, hey, fuck it. It's a World Series thing. Like, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It sucks what he did to our family, but whatever.
I think
like,
I agree.
We're going to be the bigger family.
I could definitely see that.
Maybe. I would have to also apologize on top of that. I can't just absolve him without him showing like, and I'm not saying you're suggesting.
You don't have to forgive him. I don't think he will be forgiven.
No, not even forgive, but like, you know, be okay with him showing up to Fenway. Like, that's how far it's gone. I don't even want to see him here. This is kind of funny. I saw a guy with a 2004 Red Sox jersey, and he put a piece of, it was a Schilling jersey, and he put a piece of tape on the S and the G, so it said Chillin'. And I was like, that's good. That's a good thing to do to you.
He's chill.
Yeah, you don't want to throw out, but like, you can
I've owned many jerseys in my lifetime, and a lot of them have not been great. I've now both owned a Curt Schilling jersey and a Aaron Hernandez jersey in my life.
Ooh, God. Yeah. Can you buy like some Yankees jerseys?
Ooh.
Alex Verdugo jersey might not be off.
What number is he there? What number did he take? Do we know? He didn't obviously didn't judge.
Take like 24, 27, 24. No, 27 Stanton. I think 24, if I remember correctly.
I remember there were people
61.
Like 61?
No, he didn't take 61.
No, he did.
I mean, hold on. 61.
While you're doing that, disgusting. Back in the day, do you guys remember when
44? When the
No. I thought it was like 20 something.
It's 24. It's 24.
Baseball Reference literally says 61. I'm looking at it. Shoot. That's with the Dodgers. I'm looking at it backwards.
No, get out of here.
Out of here. See ya.
I can't remember what I ate for breakfast, but I can tell you pretty much anyone's jersey number. It's the most useless skill ever.
I agree with that. I can't tell you what I ate for breakfast, but I can recall how many followers Brandon Workman's realtor Instagram account has.
Like, I'll tell you what. He has one more now.
Hell yeah, Pat. 112.
All right, so since it's a serious topic, let's all put a bow on it. I am against Curt Schilling being there.
Fuck him.
Pat is very against it.
Yeah, if Wakefield ceremony is involved, he can't be there. I think you should be invited to the 04 thing, but if Wakefield's thing is involved, like, you just can't. It's wrong.
I can't get over that. Like, I'm trying to be very careful with this topic. It's serious. I'm like, well, if he's coming, and then Pat's just like, fuck him.
Yeah, no. And I agree. Like, it is like a very serious ceremony, and it should be. It should be very sentimental, memorable. Like, that Wakefield deserves the best pregame ceremony the Red Sox have ever performed. That being said, Curt Schilling cannot be there.
Yeah, it takes away from it. We basically
said
the same thing in incredibly different ways.
Yes.
Oh my God. I think I just put it together.
What?
Oh my God. I think I just put it together. Because this is the thing. If Curt Schilling was not invited, that's a storyline. If he goes, that's a storyline. But if he invited but doesn't go, that's not really a storyline. Maybe they were like, we're going to put it out there that we invited you, but you're not coming.
I mean, it's a story either.
The
guy's such a scumbag that pretty much anything involving him is like a negative story. So way to torch your own legacy, Kurt.
Well, we're moving on to the next topic of the day. And it's also not the happiest topic, because friend of the program, Chris Murphy, has a high, reportedly from Chris Cotillo, but like the Red Sox have basically acknowledged that this is it. That he has a high grade tear in a ligament in his elbow. And I'm just gonna kick it to Pat for probably the worst Pat's prognosis he's ever gonna give us. Pat.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah. Chris Murphy likely either needs Tommy John or the surgery that Lucas Giolito just got.
Oh my God.
You have two pretty important structural ligaments in your elbow. You have your UCL, which is the Tommy John ligament, and you have your radial collateral or LCL in your elbow. It would be, I know. There's no way it's his LCL. LCL is, I don't even know if anyone in baseball history has ever torn the LCL.
What's an LCL? I don't even know what that is.
So your UCL runs right here. LCL runs along the radius, so here. But pitching,
yeah, you don't use that at all.
That's like when somebody lets their arm snap in an arm bar, that gets ripped.
Yeah, like you need some kind of crazy force going from the inside out this way.
Oh, yeah, in there.
So he, unless he's throwing like javelin, yeah, Chris Murphy probably has some structural damage to the UCL. There's different grades to tears. So grade one is like microscopic. Grade two is a pretty substantial partial tear. Grade three is a full tear. If it were a grade one, thank you, Coop.
Oh, I hate these. That's not.
It looks like a bandage.
No, Coop, look up LCL, the elbow. That's that one, that black one. Yep, thank you. Yeah. So the RCL or the LCL, that connects the radial head, that top bone, into the humerus, which is your upper arm. He didn't tear his, or I'd be stunned. I'd be legitimately stunned if it was that. Hopefully it's like a grade one tear. I feel as though if it were a grade one tear, they would not be so ominous. Feel like they would say, like they would kind of mask it as like a flexor bundle strain, flexor strain, something along the lines of that, where they're saying ligament, not saying what, and then literally giving no update on timetable or if surgery is needed. I would lean towards UCL.
What does high grade tear in this case mean?
So grade two would be, so Giolito had a partial tear.
So high grade tear would mean that it's like a full.
Yeah. So grade two would be either like a mid substance tear. So if like this is, I don't know. Yeah. So essentially here it is. So this piece of paper, UCL, right?
Oh,
this where it's still intact. That's kind of a grade. Grade two, grade three.
All right, so if you're listening on radio,
or if it comes off the bone.
If you're just listening and not watching, Pat had a thin piece of paper. He ripped it mostly in half, and that was the better scenario. And then the worst scenario, which we're afraid of, he ripped it completely in half. So I feel not very good about this.
Yeah. And like I said, I feel like if it were something that could be resolved with rest or time off, you'd kind of get the Garrett Cole answer of, you know, second, third opinion, down for a month or two, which who knows? Like that could be it. That could be like that grade one, just really irritated UCL. You let time take it, like time for healing, all that stuff. But so hopefully that is what it is. Hopefully he's only down for a month or two. But I don't know. I find that typically when teams are pretty ominous with injury updates, it's never a good thing.
I agree with you, Pat. And we've seen the pattern with the way Cora talks about it too. Anytime Cora says the word concerned and you see all the reporters type out the word concerned, this is where it goes. And now, I mean, we're still in March, the middle of March, and this is going to now be Lucas Giolito and Chris Murphy likely done for the season. And I
correct me if I'm wrong, did the Red Sox have any Tommy John guys last year? I know Whitlock had a scare, but it didn't end up being that. I want to say they didn't. Zach Kelly had a scare, but he didn't. He ended up getting back.
You know, Zach had a scare.
Nobody.
Mata got Tommy John a couple years ago, right? That was last year.
Yeah, he's had it. But yeah. This just leads to my question for you guys, and I want to hear from both of you on this. You talk to the players, and Alex Speer had a really good article out there. You all should check it out, citing our sources when we talk about other people's info. Alex Speer wrote, and he got quotes from guys. I think he had Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta, as a lot of the players, believe that the pitch clock is to blame. Other people, there was, I forget who said this. It was a study that said that sweepers and power changeups are to blame, which could be interesting because the Red Sox have this new pitching program. Like, do we blame that? But just for perspective here, I'll read a quote from the end of that Spear article, which is that, quote, independent studies by both Fangraphs and Johns Hopkins University found no correlation between changes in pitcher's pace and injuries. Meanwhile, 99% of pitches with runners on base last year were thrown with at least 2 seconds left on the clock, which is, by the way, that was in relation to Pivetta complaining about them shortening the pitch clock even more with runners on base. But quote, finally, pitcher injury list placements in 2023 were actually down relative to the prior 2 years in 4 of the 6 months of the season. So I think what that's basically saying is it's easy to blame pitch clock, but that's not to blame for the increase in injuries. Do you guys remember the whole, they were blaming the lack of, like, their inability to use sticky stuff? Remember, yeah. Glasnow, yeah, got Tommy John and he blamed that.
Like, yeah, I could see that, because no, I don't want to try to talk like a scientist when I'm not a scientist. I think it could also just be like everyone's so dead set on velocity, and I understand why. It helps a lot. But, I mean, today I saw Chris Martin is throwing at, like, what, like 96, which is the hardest he's ever thrown in spring training. And my first thought was, oh, fuck, well, he's gone. He's going
to
get hurt.
Same. That was my reaction, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where to – see, it's such a conundrum. Great word. Conundrum. Like, velocity, it's good if you're a pitcher. Helps you get guys out. Harder to hit when the ball is faster, generally. But if it's leading to more injuries, like, what do? You play at a disadvantage? Like, how do you solve this issue? And I don't want to just assume that the uptick in velocity is why guys are getting hurt. It could also be the sticky stuff. Could also be the pitch clock. Could also be a combination of the three. But, man, not looking good. Something's got to change. There's got to be some. I'm sure they're doing all the research in the world on it right now. They have to be. Yeah. They, as in Major League Baseball. But, man, something's up. This is weird.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Sammy. You're like my reaction to Chris Martin throwing harder than he's thrown in spring training was ugh. But it's for good reason. Like, we saw Lucas Giolito throwing fastballs that were multiple miles an hour higher than his average for the entire season last. Chris Murphy, his stuff ticked up in his final spring training outing. And both times, right after we saw those, there goes the elbow. So Pat, what do you think it is? I'm curious, like, do you have opinion on this?
Yeah. So I think I talked about it when it would have been Giolito, but research shows that velocity is the biggest contributor to UCL tears and damage. And I think one thing that I know for a fact I didn't clarify is that means global velocity. That's not talking if your fastball is 98. That also means, like, comparatively, if your changeup is fast, if your slider is fast, if your sweeper is fast. So all velo, not just on a fastball, all of those things count as velo. So the harder you throw, the more at risk you are. That's just a fact. That being said, I'm not going to jump to conclusions, and I don't think anyone should, that this new kind of
pitching infrastructure or pitching mechanic changes. Yeah, they're adding velo. You don't hit a failure point in 200 pitches. Like, the like, if it were the pitching program, these would be spiking in like June. These are maybe elbows that weren't perfect, and then they start throwing really hard, and then sure, you hit your breaking point. But I think those are all elbows that are probably bound to hit that breaking point at some point. Does it accelerate the timeline? I even that I wouldn't say so. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you have two guys who, well, I don't even want to put that on Chris Murphy. You have one guy who got Tommy John, you have one guy who has some form of ligamentous damage. It's very easy to point the finger at, all right, here we go. What about Tampa? No one's bringing this up in Tampa. Every year they have top two starters get Tommy
John. I'm bringing it up. I'm talking about them.
Velocity farm in Tampa. They always get
that's hurt. What I'm saying. So they, I think,
what'd they say when they got Civale? I think it was Gordo. Gordo was like, oh, he's going to be the best pitcher in the league for a while. I mean, he's going to get hurt or something.
Yeah.
One of us said that.
Yeah.
Everyone goes to Tampa hurt.
Sure. So, like, velocity introduces a pretty big risk factor. But at the same time, if it truly were these pitching mechanics and the uptick in velocity changes, I don't think you'd see a turnaround as fast as you're seeing right now with guys' elbows kind of shitting it. I think it would take some real time, and that prolonged stress at that velocity would do it. I think these injuries are kind of guys who might be predisposed, might have had micro tears, which is kind of your grade one that maybe in the offseason heals a little bit. And then now that you're ramping back up and you're throwing harder than ever, like, sure. Like, I'm sure it plays a factor, but to just single-handedly say, you know, Andrew Bailey's new infrastructure, Craig Breslow, like, these guys are ruining guys, like, you're just jumping to absolutely asinine conclusions.
Yeah. Pat, a question for you. So we've discussed on this show before how, just in general, throwing motion overhand is inherently unnatural.
Yeah.
Do you think that this rise in injury will lead to more guys dropping down to like sidearm or even submarine?
So I actually don't know what the research says about sidearm, because sidearm is interesting, because when you come over the top, it's here. Coop, can you make me big for a second, please?
Big.
Make him big.
So
I'm going to narrate this a little bit for
you. Throw and you come over the top here. There definitely is, like, I'll do it this way. The inside of my elbow leads, and then you come through. So you definitely have some, I mean, you, that's all the stress is through that middle elbow in the front of the shoulder. That being said, if you drop down sidearm, you're still leading with that kind of middle aspect of the elbow.
Does it help the shoulder at all?
It might help the shoulder a little bit, because it's not so abducted up here. It's more,
it feels more natural.
So kind of like scapular plane. So I'm sure it might help the shoulder a little bit, but in terms of, you know, UCL middle elbow, when you throw from here, that all that elbow is exposed, that stress winding it back. Unless you keep a completely straight arm through for a sidearm, like,
like a disc throw kind of.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'd be curious to see what the research says on that, but off the top of my head, I don't. Yeah.
That's rough. All right. Well, maybe. So this is why you got to watch the YouTube. You can see Pat's elbows. Guy's got nice elbows.
You can't get a true Pat's prognosis. A true Pat's prognosis experience without the YouTube page. Pat, before we enough said, I think we need a Chris Murphy from you.
Chris Murphy.
Hoping for the best for friend of the program, Chris Murphy.
Hey, the best part, time is on his side. He's still young. He'll be back.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He'll be back. Yeah. Whether it's sooner rather than later, he will absolutely be back. But wrapping this thing up a little bit, we'll get to some enough said. I can go first for this one.
Hit it.
Coop, I pull the picture up. Jaren Duran. I think Jaren Duran has a lookalike.
Oh, I get it right away.
Jaren Duran kind of looks like the Tiger King now.
Oh my God. That's the meanest thing anyone has ever said about Jaren Duren. What an insult.
This is on the level.
This was your guy, Gordo.
This is on the level of Rob telling me I look like Nick Sirianni. It's just a rude thing to say.
Or are you telling Rob you look like Pete Abe?
Hey, we don't mention that name.
Whoops.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's brutal. I would just say the hair looks like the Tiger King.
Nah, yeah, that's literally all it is. It's just the hair.
Oy vey.
Obviously, Jaren Duren is way better looking than the Tiger King. He is way cooler than the Tiger King.
I hope
Tiger King is very interesting.
I hope he listens to this and then confronts you in Florida and is like, "You are mean, Gordo.
You said I looked like the Tiger King."
You know who lives? Doesn't he live in Florida too? Tiger King? We can go see him in prison.
Is he in jail?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go visit him.
Was that all in Florida?
Yeah.
Mostly. They went to like Oklahoma and the South area. All right. Am I up?
But yeah. Yeah, you go.
Holy shit. I do not know if you guys saw, but NBC, I think it was. NBC News absolutely massacred the Red Sox. They went on the street and did the man on the street thing where you just speak to fans around Fenway and they're like, "You excited for the season?" Every single answer was like, "No, not really. Most years I am, but not this year." They asked, "Are you going to go to games?" "Probably not many this year. Not as many as I normally would." And then they asked some guys to name the players. Oh my God. Yeah. Do we have enough time to play it? All right, go ahead.
Out to Fenway Park to find out if anyone cares. Mary?
Well, if you walk around Fenway Park here and talk to people, you'll find not only are they unaware of opening day, many of them can't even name a current Red Sox player. How many current players can you name on the Red Sox?
None.
Current? Danvers? That's it. Damn, I'm blanking right now. It's the camera.
When I was a kid, it was, must-see TV when Pedro Martinez was pitching.
Usually other years, like, I kind of hear about it or, like, people are talking about it. But this year, I didn't even know that they were, like, starting. I had no idea.
In fact, you can find ticket prices for regular season games as low as $11 on Vivid Seats.
Oh.
They're not willing to plunk down money to go to Fenway to see the Red Sox. And that typically hasn't been the case over the last 20 years. They've had the highest ticket prices in baseball because the market would bear it. Sox ownership has not spent money to put a representative team on the field. And this is how you end up with this sort of apathy that we're talking about a week or two ahead of opening day.
Good God, that is
That's so bad.
Like, we took to the streets to see if anybody cares.
Oh, hold on, guys. Hold on.
I gotta go.
Hold on. Okay. Hold on. $11? That's like 100 times the price of last year with that Yankee game. Come on, guys. It's like way more expensive. Interest is higher.
I got an issue with Frank.
Is that
him saying when I was a kid we had Pedro pitching? You're not old enough to say that type of stuff. You're not that type of, like, if that would mean he's what, 30, 40 ish. You're not at that, like,
Sammy.
You're not
Sammy, you were not a man yet. Pedro's pitching.
You're old, but you're not an old man.
The first game I went to, oh, you're saying I was an adult. Ha ha ha. I thought you were saying I'm not.
Like, if you were a kid when Pedro was pitching, you're not old enough to say, "When I was a kid, fuck you."
When I was a kid.
What also, didn't really get a good look at that guy. I feel like when he was a kid, Clemens was pitching. That guy looked pretty old. Then again, I say that, and I have no concept of how old I am. I'm like, "Oh, guy's so old." He's probably like 10 years older than me. So,
anyway, yeah, but that was just, it does not get worse. That was pretty rough. Yeah, I hope John Henry sees it. Maybe his spine is back in place. Who knows? But yeah. Ugly scene. I'm fired up for the season. I still am actually fired up for the season. I know I've been very doom and gloom, but I'm at that point where I've completely talked myself into it. You know, if Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock both pitch at a very high level and Trevor Story bounces back and Yoshida has a better season and This will take me like 25 minutes to finish, but yeah, you get the point.
Oh God. Yeah, no, I'm kind of there too. Like, I'm excited. Like, I'll be excited until they're not in contention. Like, God, just let me live. I mean, Pat, you got enough said?
I do. I got a quick one. Shout out Jazz Chisholm. Shout out Jazz
Chisholm. Oh, yeah. What was that?
What did he do? Oh, did he hit on a girl or something?
What? No.
Oh, I saw him.
I was going to say, he's building a welcoming and accepting clubhouse because he went on a podcast today and absolutely obliterated Miguel Rojas for being a dick.
Really?
Yeah. I thought he was a great guy. Mickey Rowe.
He said I didn't watch the clip. I just saw the quotes from the interview. And essentially Miguel Rojas was like just shitting on the young guys for, thanks, Coop. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, I was already a team leader without being called a team leader. But the vets, you can't be a team leader when you got guys in the clubhouse that's been in there for 9-10 years, even though they suck. They've been there for 9-10 years. Yeah. And the team calls them the team captain, but like, they're not a good captain. They're not a good person. You're not even a good athlete at this point. Yeah. You're just here. Yeah. And you're bringing down the young guys that are supposed to be good. Bro, like, I watched someone get called up to the big leagues, supposed to be like top three prospects on our team, right? He gets up there, hits a homer. Like, first or second at bat, hits a homer, right? His next at bat, he goes and does the Juan Soto shuffle, right? Like, he's a kid. His favorite player is Juan Soto. He just got to the big leagues. Tell me why he comes in the dugout after he walks, get around the bay, comes in the dugout after these vets sit on the side of him and start yelling at him, saying, bro, you're not Juan Soto, bro. You shouldn't be doing that. Juan Soto is an all-star, da 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 da. You can't be doing that. Bro, what do you mean? He's having fun, bro. We playing a fucking kids' games. Yeah. Like, that's when I step in and say, bro, y'all better back up off this boy, bro. This man is starting. He's playing every day for us. Why are y'all in his face? Y'all don't even play every day.
Yeah. Wow. So shout out Jazz Chisholm.
And that went on for too. He got into like some specifics about like Miguel Rojas like letting him sleep through meetings or something. Like, he's like, yeah, I was asleep and he just would walk right by me and let me miss meetings. Like, yeah, weird shit. Do you guys remember like the Miguel Rojas Red Sox rumors from a year ago? Yep. Like, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Him and John Birdie.
I like that because he was like a good defensive shortstop and a leader. And I figured, you know, story's out. Great, it's a good placeholder, but damn. And, you know, you can't just assume that Rojas, you know, is like a jerk or anything. He has been around for a long time, and he's not the greatest, so you have to think he has some leadership qualities, and that's just one guy. But damn, that's a rough review from old Jazz. By the way, he did also hit on send something flirty about a model. I'm not crazy. I found it, and she is very pretty. So good call, Jazz.
Go Jazz. We've always been a pro Jazz podcast.
Cool glove.
Anything else before we wrap this thing up?
I'm good.
I like Jazz Chisholm's glove, the ice cream cone glove.
Yep.
Oh yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Very cool. Very cool.
But on that note, this has been episode 54 of Play Tessie. So we got to do the math and figure out how many we're gonna be at when we hit opening day. We'll figure that out. It'll probably be like right around 60, maybe a little bit less than 60. Opening day's coming, but yeah, this is episode 54. But before you leave, remember, hit that subscribe button, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or the Odyssey app. Hit that subscribe button and give us that 5-star review and comment, tell us about how much you love Jazz Chisholm's glove. Just give a shout out to Jazz Chisholm in the comments, whether that's on a podcast platform or on YouTube, where you can find us at the WEEI channel and you can subscribe to that. And hit that thumbs up on the video. That helps us a ton. So just hit that button before you tune out. Follow us also, Play Tessie, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Pat, for Coop behind the wall, whatever you want to call it. It's Gordo here for Play Tessie. It's been episode 54. Thanks for tuning in. Toodaloo.